Good. Well, let me just say, in case people have joined us while we've been worshipping, just a big welcome to the Antioch meeting this Sunday afternoon. We've got about 54 screens. It's always difficult to know what screens convert into number of people, but probably somewhere over 100 people. So that's very good. Delightful to have everybody over here with us today. I'm very glad to be just introducing Callan Slipper. Callan and I have known each other for, well, my calculation, well over 20 years, but I don't want to try and guess how many years over 20, but it's over 20 years. I've lived in Acton all that time. He's mostly lived in Acton for that time, although he's moved in and out. He went up to Hertfordshire for a couple of few years and is back now living on Twyford Avenue. And is part of the Focolare community and the Focolare House of Man living on Twyford Avenues. We are also both part of the same church here in Acton, St. Gabriel's Church of England in North Acton, and where Callan is an assistant priest when his services are needed or when he's available, because his role is he's not as a parish priest, but his main work today is as the National Ecumenical Officer for the Church of England. And it's particularly in that capacity, I'm delighted to have you with us because we count our ecumenical nature as one of our highest priorities as Antioch, Callan, as I think you know, and I know the Focolare do as well, where unity is a key call for the Focolare. Callan's also the author of a number of articles, booklets. He's a doctor, so he's got a PhD, I think, if I remember rightly, Callan, and excuse me if I get it wrong, on the Trinity. And I think that already gives us just a feel for the depth of Callan, our brother here, as he speaks to us, a man of deep love of the Lord who ponders the wonderful mysteries of our faith. And it's in this context particularly, or that context, that I'm delighted to ask him to share, to speak a little bit about the topic, the challenging topic, the mysterious topic of unanswered prayer when God seems less present to us than he does at other times. Callan, welcome. I give you the floor, so to speak. Great to have you with us. I turn it over to you now, Callan, please.
Thank you, Andy. So, yes, you give me the screen, I suppose that's what the expression ought to be. I'd like to start with two statements that are both true, but to say the least, they're in profound tension with each other. The first is that there's actually no such thing as unanswered prayer. The second is that what we call unanswered prayer is extremely common. So let's look at the first statement. Why should I say that there's no unanswered prayer? Well, Jesus taught it. For example, in Matthew's gospel, he says, "Ask and it will be given to you, search and you will find, for everyone who asks receives." And he concludes his list of instances, hammering home the same point with a typical bit of Jesus logic based on the principle that for anything good, if we can do it, then God must do it even more. And so he concludes, "If you then, who are evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more your heavenly Father give good things to those who ask him." I don't yet wish to jump to the conclusion that the Father is only bound by his love for us and his almighty power to give us good things, which is, of course, part of the answer to the question. But rushing too quickly to that may blind us to other truths. What I want to stress is at this point that if any of his children, and that means all of us, saints and sinners, kind and thoughtless, Christians and non-Christians, believers and atheists alike, any of his children ask, God will give. So why do our prayers often seem to have so little effect? Because let's make no mistake about it, if our prayers were answered, the world would be a very different place. There would be no wars, no crime, no poverty, no sickness, no natural disasters, and probably no death. And yet all of these things persist despite our asking for good things. A couple of weeks ago, I was asking for a miracle. Good things to ask for. There was a man living in an asylum not far from here, whose wife died recently, leaving him and their two children, a girl of 13 and a boy of 11, without any other family in this country. The man caught COVID. Things did not look good. He was overweight, a smoker, and had chronic pulmonary disease. Thinking of his children, how could you not pray for his survival? He died. I don't for a moment suppose that this is uncommon. So what's going on? Of course, some of the things we might ask for are dependent also upon the will of others, like the end of wars. God does not override our wills. He always respects our freedom. But at other times, like with this man and his children, we're not talking about human freedom. To glimpse an answer, we need to shift our perspective. In the first place, our idea of what is good is often partial or even awry. Death, for instance, is not the final tragedy, at least for the person who dies. In this world, we're training for real life, for the fulfillment of every life lies beyond this world, in paradise. And the door to get there is death. What looks to us like a disaster is something very different for the one who dies, who is gathered into the arms of Almighty Mercy. Next, we certainly do not see all ends. Looking at my own life, it's often my greatest failures that have led to the best things that have happened to me. I would not be here today, delighting in the vocation that I believe God has given me from all eternity, without my failures. We do not see all ends, but God does. Which means we can affirm another truth, one of the most glorious and joyful of all. God's love is displayed in everything. In everything that is and in everything that happens. Is it sunny? That is God's love. Is it raining? That's God's love. Am I happy? That too is God's love. Am I struggling? Also that is God's love. Catherine of Siena used to say that whatever God gives or permits is for your salvation. Thus the whole universe, in all its wonder and in its detail, is God's hymn of love to his creation, and especially to us, made in his image. The good we don't receive, therefore, is God's reply. He wants us to have a better good, and he wants us to grow in faith. Perhaps he wants us to continue asking, so that we may pray without ceasing and never lose heart, as the Gospel of Luke puts it. And I suspect I'm no different from anyone else. When I look at my life, the times of greatest spiritual growth have often been the times of greatest difficulty. God does not take me out of the valley of the shadow of death, but he strengthens me and leads me through it. what seems to me like an unanswered prayer is the sigh of his love as he leads me, an answer profounder than my expectation or my hope. Perhaps our best response to this is to try to make sure we ask for those things that accord to God's will for us. This is what Jesus tells us when he says we should ask in his name. It means according to his identity, shaped by who he is. If we ask anything in his name, then of course we receive. And given that God is love and wants our happiness, praying in God's name can even be for the most trivial things, ice creams or breakfast cereal. They're part of our daily bread, after all. Possibly here, speaking of praying according to who Jesus is, we should recall Jesus' own experience. He too had his moment of silence from God. His passion began with his agony in the garden when he asked that the coming torment should be spared him. He then, however, added his deepest prayer. Nevertheless, not my will, but yours be done. This is praying in his name. Ask for anything you like, but above all, ask for God's will to be done. There is our greatest joy, our real happiness. Jesus, we have to acknowledge, did not get his wish. The cup of pain did not pass from his lips. And on the cross, he suffered the most terrible dereliction, when in order to take upon himself all the failure, pain, negativity, loss, sin that belongs to us, to each of us, he experienced all that to its uttermost degree. And in exchange, he gave us his own self, his life, his union with God, his divinity. As Paul puts it, for our sake, God made him to be sin, who knew no sin, so that in him we might become the righteousness of God. Thus Jesus became God-forsaken and cried out the terrible question, my God, why have you forsaken me? And he met silence. No answer came. But we know the answer. It's the mystery of our redemption. It was thus his most powerful prayer. His utter defeat was his triumph. For us too, united to him, our moments of greatest dereliction are when our prayer most sharply pierces heaven.
Thank you, Callum. Some profound reflections there, much appreciated for us to ponder, consider. And you know, one of